Morning. Today's daf in Chulin is daf Zayin. We're on Vav Amud Beis. We're going to be starting today with a testimony that was given regarding Rabbi Meir and Rabbi's response to the testimony. And also, just one other name to remember is Rabbi Yeshua Mezeres is the one giving the testimony. All this is coming up because, once again, it's going to have that classic line. I say classic line. We've seen this line already now. This is going to be our third day in a row that we're going to see this line. That line first comes up on Daf Hey Amud Beis. It came up in yesterday's Daf as well, Daf Vav. And it's going to come up for a third day in the row in Daf Zayin. So here, if you can just remember, if I can remember, the beginning of Chulin, 3 days in a row, we have that line. HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects his tzaddikim so they won't eat non-kosher food. HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects the animals of tzaddikim so they won't eat non-kosher food. I know that sounds weird, but we're going to discuss that today. And finally, after 2 days of teasing the story, we're finally going to hear the story of Rav Pinchas ben Yair and his donkey. That's also coming up in today's daf. And let's get underway. Hey, Rav Yeshua ben Zeres ben Chamav Shel Rabbi Meir, Lifnei Rabbi Al Rabbi Meir. So Rav Yeshua ben Zeres now is giving testimony regarding Rabbi Meir, and he's doing so in front of Rabbi. In other words, he's basically telling a story about Rabbi Meir to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. It's not Lashon Hara, as we're going to see in just a moment, because Rabbi is going to understand that this has halachic significance. So what he saw Rabbi Meir do was eat a leaf, a vegetable leaf. When I say leaf, by the way, I'm talking about the edible portion. Although I know some of you out there doesn't believe any of it's edible, but anyway, the alei shel yarek, the vegetable leaf, beveit she'an, in the region of Beit She'an, in the valley of Beit She'an. V'hitu Rebbe's Beit She'an kol al yadom. Now Rebbe says, okay, if Rebbe Meir is now eating a leaf of vegetables in Beit She'an without taking off Trumas and Maisos, now I didn't make that point, and that's really important because that's exactly the whole point over here, without having taken off Trumas and Maisos. So that means to say that Beit She'an must not be imbued with the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore is going to be potter from Trumas and Maisos. So therefore Rebbe, as a result of hearing the story regarding Rebbe Meir, said, okay, I am now creating an exemption area in Israel specific to Beit She'an so that no Trumas and Maisos has to be taken off when produce is taken from Beit She'an. Okay. We'll get to all the details. There are a lot of details coming up. So Chavro Olav Achiv Uveis Aviv. So now Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, so his very own father, together with other members of the family, come running over to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Amr lo makum shavasecha v'avosa v'secha nago bo iser, ata atinog bo heter. And they come at him with what seems to be an extraordinarily powerful argument, and that is the argument of minog. Meaning this is what we've been doing for years. Your fathers, your forefathers. So many of them were noheg trumas amaisos in Beit She'an. And now because of an episode with Rabbi Meir, you're now ready to overturn what has been the accepted minog. So darsh la mikra zeh. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi does not give a direct answer to their argument, but he gives an indirect answer. And we're going to now go back in time to Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, let's try to be aware of where we are historically. So when we're talking about the discussions of Rebbe and the incident of Rabbi Meir, this is all post-Chorban by Sheni, post-destruction of the Second Temple. Now we're going to go back to an incident that occurs with Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and this is in the middle of Bais Rishon, hundreds of years earlier. So the Navi describes over there in Malachim Beis, V'kisis nachash nechosh asher asa Moshe, ki ara yamim ahema, So one of the things that Chizkiyahu did, and if you remember the fourth parak of Pesachim, where the Gemara basically gives like a grading scale to Chizkiyahu, six things that Chizkiyahu did in total, three of them the Chachamim liked, three of them the Chachamim did not like. Well, this is one of the things that the Chachamim were happy with, and that is, he took the copper snake that Moshe made in Parshas Chukas. So there was an incident in the desert where the Jews were being bitten by snakes, and to seek healing, so what the Jewish people were told to do was look at the copper snake that Moshe made, and that was the one that creates the healing. The Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, which we're all familiar with, says it's not the copper snake that healed, but it forces Jewish people to look up and be mechaven libel shamayim. But anyway, in any regard, but now after for hundreds of years, this copper snake was in existence. Hundreds of years. In other words, from Moshe Rabbeinu to Chizkiyahu HaMelech. So, whatever. Let's just leave it at hundreds. For hundreds of years, the snake was in existence. And finally, Chizkiyahu said enough because although Moshe used it as a means of getting people to concentrate and focus towards the Kadosh Baruch Hu, so what happened is that the people started worshiping the snake themselves. and offering incense to the snake, referring to the snake as Nechusha San, giving it some sort of name of with a deity power to it. So now consider, Chizkiyahu HaMelech was not the only good king of Yehuda. Now, in terms of the list, extensive list of good kings there are in Yehuda, the list is not that extensive. So, but still, there were out there. There were good kings out there of Yehuda that came before Chizkiyahu. And the Gemara now comments, Afshar ba'asav lo bi'aru, ba'yoshav v'lo bi'aru, v'alo kolav v'dazar sheba'olam asav yoshav v'bi'aru. So, okay, so granted, that's not an extensive list, but still, we could point to two good kings of Yehuda, of the Yehuda portion of Bnei Yisrael, Asa and Yehoshaphat, and they made it as part of their monarchy to go ahead and to remove, eradicate all the Avodah Zarah. Now, included in that was also the copper snake, and they didn't do so. So, Rebbe's comment now regarding Chizkiyahu, in that he didn't get rid of, how could it be that Chizkiyahu was the first one who thought about getting rid of the copper snake? Ella, top of Zion and Aleph, Makam Nichol Avos of Lizkad Dabo, Afani Makam Nichol Avos of Lizkad Dabo. In other words, what happens is that every generation, even though there were people that were before you who were great, and before Chizkiyahu came, so there was us and the Yehoshaphat, and they were great. But still, even though you're following great people, there's still room for distinguishing yourself. So there was room for Chizkiyahu distinguishing himself, i.e. the copper snake, and eradication of the copper snake. And Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is saying, look, I know there were great people, many great people that came before me. But still there's an area in which I can distinguish myself. Now it's interesting because when it comes to Chizkiyahu, his point of distinguishing is that he eradicated Avodah Zarah. In terms of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, what's his point of distinguishing? So he's going to create a heter. He's going to now create an allowance of an area in Eretz Yisrael where he's now going to be declaring exempt-free, a tax-free zone in Eretz Yisrael of Beit She'an where you don't have to take off Trumas and Maestros. But still, in other words, it's an area of distinguishing himself. Mikan, Latam Chacham, Shama Davar Halacha, Shein Mezichin Oso, V'Amir Lo'in Mezichin Oso, V'Amir Lo'in Mezichichin Oso. So if you have a Talmud Chacham who says over Halacha, so don't do the following to him. Now there are three different versions of what you shouldn't do. They all speak to the same basic idea. In other words, a Talmud Chacham says a halacha, like don't be so quick to challenge the halacha, meaning he knows what he's talking about. We're talking obviously about a reputed Talmud Chacham. So don't be so quick to just simply reject it. Now the Gemara over here is going to be very specific about the three different languages that we're describing over here. Manda amra mizichin dechidichsiv lo yizach choshen. So if the word is mizichin, just like what the Torah says regarding the choshen that's worn by the Kohen Gadol, you shouldn't move it out of place. So if you have a Talmud Chacham saying something, and it sounds a little bit funny, don't try to move it out of place. Meaning, hear what he has to say, absorb what he has to say. Now, if it's the word is maznichin, it's the same basic idea, but Gemara quotes a different pasuk, lo yiznach la'olam Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not forsake us. And when you hear Talmud Chacham saying something, which, again, sounds a little bit off, so don't forsake that which he said. Again, same basic idea, listen to it. And finally, Amanda Amra Mizichichin Dinan, Mishirab Zichuche Alev, Rabu Machlokas V'Yisrael. The Gemara over here, in explaining the word Mizichichin, uses a Mishnah in Sota. The Mishnah in Sota describes how, when people were Zichuche Halev, literally weak of the heart. In other words, where the Mishnah in Sota over here is pointing to a time historically where the students were not paying careful enough attention to what the Rebbeim said, and as a result of that, Rabu Machlokas B'Yisrael, so there was a proliferation of debate that took place amongst the Jewish people. And as we already discussed, the debate increased, thank you. Okay, so the debate increased, specifically regarding the students of Shammai and Hillel. Shammai and Hillel themselves debated, but really seldomly. And it was only when the next generation, what we describe as Beit Shammai Beis Hillel, so that's when really Machlokas exploded. And the Mishnah in Sota says, and I know I usually quote this as a Rambam, but it's the Mishnah in Sota. The Mishnah in Sota says this is a result of the fact that the students were not following closely enough that which the Rebbe said, and so therefore Machlokas increased. But anyway, the point of all this is that the word in the Mishnah that's used is Zechuche, and so therefore when Yatam Chacham says something, so don't be soft in terms of what he's saying, meaning listen carefully to what he's saying, pay careful attention. Maskif la Yehuda Breda Reb Shimon Ben Pazi. So the Gemara says, okay, now what we're going to do is we're going to head back to the incident of Rabbi Meir eating the vegetables in Beit She'an without taking off Trumas and Maestros. And the Gemara says, look, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi now is building an entire Torah based on that incident. And that is that he's creating an exemption for the area. Now, aren't there ways to basically try to explain the behavior of Meir without arriving at that conclusion? The Gemara is going to make a couple of attempts. First of all, Beit She'an is not part of Israel? Like, that's crazy talk. Meaning, before Shir this morning. So I extensively researched, meaning I looked at the picture over there. And to see where Beit She'an is, and I'm thinking to myself, I visited Beit She'an. Like, it's in Israel. Like, you know, south of the Kinneret. Like, okay, like maybe it's talking, in other words, Beit She'an, not part of Eretz Yisrael. And so without having to even know the geography, all you have to know is Tanakh. And the Gemara here quotes from the Pasuk in Shoftim, meaning that what Menashe did not do, Menashe, who obviously is one of the 12 Shvatim, who obviously has Chelek of Eretz Yisrael, is they did not drive out the Kananim from Beit She'an and the suburbs of Beit She'an. That's the Benoseh. So over here, how could you tell me it's not part of Eretz Yisrael? Of course it's part of Eretz Yisrael. So So the Gemara says, your question is wonderful, but you forgot one important detail. And so let me remind you of this one important detail so that you'll understand our discussion. So you know, when we came in the first time in Eretz Yisrael, the Ole Mitzrayim, so we conquered Eretz Yisrael. Let's for our purposes, let's just simply call it all of Eretz Yisrael. I know it's a vague term, but you'll see the point where the Gemara is trying to make. So they conquered all of Eretz Yisrael, and then what happened is that they were dispersed, and they came back in from Bavel, and they rebuilt it, but not all of Eretz Yisrael. Now, over here, in order to entertain this opinion, so we're going to have to assume that Eretz Yisrael was imbued with Kedusha, but not permanently. Meaning that when we came into Eretz Yisrael, we obviously invested the land itself with Kedusha, but in other words, it wasn't a permanent Kedusha, so that when we were exiled, so the land was taken, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael was gone. An important point, by the way, you always have to keep in mind, because I know these lines of the Gemara of Kedusha Rishon and Kishul HaShaisa, and whether it's Kishul HaSilavo or Lo Kishul HaSilavo, which are always your two positions taken in the Gemara, really they are two different discussions that are had, and it's our job just to make sure that we keep everything organized. Meaning right now we're having a discussion not about the Beis HaMikdash, we're having a discussion about the land of Eretz Yisrael. And so it's just always important to realize whether we're talking either about the land of Eretz Yisrael, we're talking about the Beis HaMikdash. And they're not necessarily connected hand in hand. But it doesn't matter. For our purposes right now, we're talking about the land of Eretz Yisrael. And we're assuming right now that the Kedusha of the land of Eretz Yisrael is Kishul HaShaisa v'lo Kishul HaSedlavo. So that means that when we're coming in now to build the second temple, the Kedusha is going to have to get reinvested. Now, there's another important point that Rashi makes over here. And again, just to make sure that we get everything straight. Remember now, we're talking about the actions of Rabbi Meir. When did Rabbi Meir live? After the destruction of the second temple. So even though, and Rashi makes this point, this is not, it's, you know, you didn't need me for this, but I'm spelling out the Rashi. Even after the destruction of the second temple, it's not like the Kedusha went away. Because if the Kedusha went away again, so then there's no discussion of Trumas HaMaisos, meaning the land of Eretz Yisrael no longer has Kedusha. So it must be that even though the Gemara is subscribing to the viewpoint that Kishul HaShaisa v'lo Kishul HaSilavo, that's only talking about the transition from first temple to second temple. But post Bayis Sheni, so the land still retained its Kedusha. Now why that should be? So see Rashi who gives some details regarding that and some explanation in terms of that. But obviously that's what you have to say in order to understand our Gemara's discussion. And so here now, the Gemara fills in an important detail. And we're back to the Gemara. Why is it now that when we go back in to rebuild the second base of Mikdash and reinvest the land of Eretz Yisrael with Kedusha, so we didn't reinvest all of Eretz Yisrael with Kedusha, so the Gemara goes on to explain the strategy. And the reason why over here is because we know that coming back into Eretz Yisrael, there are going to be a lot of poor people. And there's going to be a Shemitah year coming up. And if we now invest all of Eretz Yisrael with Kedusha, so we're going to have a Shemitah year in which no lands can be harvested, and we're going to have a lot of poor people, and we're just simply not going to be able to handle it all. So therefore, as a strategy, what they did is they left some of the lands unsanctified so that during the Shemitah year they can cultivate and harvest those lands during the Shemitah year.
But the whole principle behind Shemitah is that you're kind of relying on Hashem to provide for 3 years. Like, where is that Nemunah going? Like, what happened to that?
It's a great question.
Okay.
I'm a
shows your Emunah Hashem for 3 years.
Right. It's the tension between being practical and having Emunah. You're right. So good. So you're practical and he has Emunah. I'm sure he's practical and I'm sure you have Emunah. So it's okay. So Amar Le Reb Yirmiyah Le Reb Zera V'Hareb Meir Ale Ba Mahuda Achil. And again, the Gemara wants to know, how are you building an entire halacha based on an action, one action where he eats a vegetable? So the Gemara says he ate one vegetable, and that's what's called a snack. In halacha, we all know that you can snack from the land before we get to the end of the production, right? The Gemar Malacha. Once you arrive at Gemar Malacha, so then you can't even snack. But prior to the Gemar Malacha, so you can have a snack, you can go out to the field, you can take a fruit without having taken off Trumas and Maisos. Because again, before the Gemar Malacha, it's not even Tevel. So Amalei Me'aguda Achle V'tanan Yerka Negad Mishiyaged. So the Gemara says no, because in what we witnessed Rabbi Meir doing is he didn't just simply pick a vegetable out of the field. In other words, the vegetable was already bundled together. Mm-hmm. We know regarding vegetables, the Gemar Malacha vegetables is Eged. Once they are tied together, that now is the point of the Gemar Malacha. So we know now that the vegetables hit the point of Gemar Malacha. Okay, so the Gemara says, scratch that as a suggestion. V'dilma lava daite. So the Gemara says, okay, well, maybe Rabbi Meir was just mindlessly eating the vegetable. Mindlessly eating it. So the Gemara says, no, I'm not accepting that. And here now, for the third day in the row, here we are. Kadosh Baruch Hu is protecting the animals of tzaddikim. You don't think that Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to protect the tzaddikim themselves? Reb Meir is not going to mindlessly eat a vegetable, not remembering that he needs to take off Trumas and Maisros. The Gemara says, maybe he did take off Trumas and Maisros, but from a vegetable that was not in the vicinity, but was from another place. To which the Gemara says, no, you're not allowed to do that, and we wouldn't suspect Reb Meir of doing that. Lo nechshadu chaverim l'trum shalom and amukaf. Chaverim don't do that. People who are committed to halacha are not going to be taking off trumas and maisros shalom and hamukaf, where the vegetables that I'm taking off trumas and maisros are not nearby. From Rashi, the way it sounds, Rashi seems to indicate that this is an issur d'rabbanan, not an issur d'oraisa. If I can highlight the Rashi, l'trum shalom and hamukaf, Rashi writes, I'm skipping to the middle of that Rashi. It's below where we are in the Gemara. It's about three quarters of the way down. First word in the line in Rashi is Zelazer. Rashi writes, V'asa l'chaver, l'hafrish m'masha ein l'fanav, amash l'fanav. Rashi writes that for a chaver, someone who's really committed to halacha, he cannot take off trumas and maisros if both the truma and maiser portion are not right there in front of you together with the with the portion that you're looking to correct. Dishema oso shu samech alav eno be'en shenevad onirkav v'nimse shein omer klum v'ochel tevalim. The way Rashi describes it, you know what the problem is? The problem is that you think you have vegetables in your house, in which now you're going to be declaring that trumas and maisros on the food you're eating right here, but who knows? Maybe it's rotted. Maybe it's lost. And so therefore, you're not sure if it's here, so therefore that's why it's not going to work. It sounds like from Rashi, it's a gzera d'rabbanan. That's the way Rashi seems to indicate it. Other Rishonim don't agree with Rashi. They say that's an issur min haTorah, but I showed you the Rashi inside. V'dilma, back to the Gemara. And perhaps, nasan einav b'tzad zev achal b'tzad acher. Maybe what he did is as follows. Maybe he ate from one part of the vegetable with an eye on the other part, keeping in mind that the other part is going to be trumas and maestros. To which the Gemara says, Amalei chazimang gavir rabba kamasir ala. The Gemara says, okay, but let's remind each other of an important detail in this whole incident. Rabbi Meir ate the vegetable. It wasn't just anybody who witnessed it, but it was specifically Rabbi Yehoshua who witnessed it, right? It was Rabbi Yehoshua, going all the way back to the beginning of the whole sugya. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Zeruz ben Chama of Shel, Rabbi Meir. Okay, so it was Rabbi Yehoshua who himself was a Talmid Chacham. So it's not for naught that a Talmid Chacham is witnessing the event, he obviously is realizing and recognizing that Rabbi Meir is doing something that is halachically significant. And he would not be led to the erroneous conclusion that, it must be an area that's exempt, but meanwhile it's not an area that's an exempt, but for some other technicality that Rabbi Meir is eating the vegetable. No, Rabbi Meir is eating the vegetable because the area is an exempt area, and Rabbi Yoshua is observing it. Rabbi Yoshua is arriving at the correct conclusion, reporting it to Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, and Rabbi Yehuda Anasi therefore bases his ruling on the edus of Rabbi Yoshua. Okay, for 3 days in a row now we've been teasing the story of Behemtim Shel Tzadikim and the animals of a tzaddik not eating non-kosher food. So what are we talking about? And so now for the third day consecutive, I've told you, well, please wait. Well, now the wait is officially over. And so here we are now in the Gemara, going to be learning the story of Pinchas ben Yair. Now, there are two times as we've gone through Shas in this cycle, in every cycle, that we get to hear the story of Pinchas ben Yair. Once here in Chulin Daf Zayin, today's Daf, and again back in Shkalim. You'll note that there are significant differences between the way the Bavli tells the story versus the Yerushalmi and Shkalim telling the story. On another occasion, not today, so you'll spend time going through the two versions of the story, noting the differences. If you want to see the Rishonim, already pick up on it. It's that you already have the Rishonim recognizing the differences between them. And it's good to observe. It's good to note. In the meantime, however, we're going to do obviously today's Daf Zayin and Chulin, and we're doing the Bavli's version of the story. Story goes like this. So the story revolves around Rav Pinchas ben Yair, who is en route right now to do the mitzvah of Pidyon Shvuyim. So Jews were taken into captivity, and he's looking to ransom the Jews. It is what the Gemara elsewhere describes as mitzvah rabba. It's a tremendous mitzvah to go ahead and ransom the Jews. By the way, parenthetically, it's a subcategory of the mitzvah of tzedakah, because obviously it's money. It's all money. In other words, what you're going to do is you're going to go to the non-Jews and you're going to look to pay them off in order to ransom. The Gemara elsewhere, it's the Gemara in Gittin, if I remember correctly, in the fifth Perek. So the Gemara elsewhere talks about the various takanas that were made in terms of how much to pay for someone who was being held ransom. I'm sorry, someone who was being held captive. But in any event, however, Rav Pinchas ben Yair is en route to do the mitzvah Pidyon Shvuyim. So Pagabe beginai nahara, so he gets to the river Ginai. Amarle, so he now has a conversation, discussion with the river. Now, I know that sounds strange, but okay, it's for Pinchas ben Yair, and he can be talking to the river. Tosus on the bottom of the Amud notes that we can understand the Gemara in one of two ways. Okay, you could be either a little metaphysical, or you could be a little bit more, you could be a little more rational, whichever camp you're in. So Tosus says, well, let's say we'll be a little bit metaphysical. Over here, who is he talking to? He's not talking to the actual river itself, but he's talking to the Sar Shal Yam. Right, every part of nature has got a spiritual component influencing it, and so over here he's talking to the Sar Shel Yam, the spiritual influence of the river. That's the conversation that Rav Pinchas ben Yair is having. If you prefer to be a little bit more rational, so we could still stay in the same Tosos on the bottom of the Amud, and Tosos offers another pshat, in that it's not an actual conversation he's having, it's a theoretical conversation that he's having, meaning here's what he could argue to the river, and here's what the river could argue back to him. Okay, whichever one you prefer, they're both in Tosos. In any event, he's now conversing with the river, and he says, Amarlei ginai chalakli miyamecha v'avor bach. So he instructs the river to split so that he can walk through the river. So Amarle, so the river responds back, Ata holech la'asos ritzon konech, va'ani holech la'asos ritzon koni. What a fascinating answer by the river. He says, you're doing a mitzvah, you know I'm also doing a mitzvah? The laws of nature is a mitzvah. When I am following the laws of nature, I'm following ritzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm doing the will of God, I'm doing a mitzvah. So in other words, so good, you're doing a mitzvah. Me too. And furthermore, my mitzvah is better than your mitzvah. What? He says, my mitzvah is better than yours. So he says, look, you're going to do the mitzvah Pidyon Shvuyim. You know you don't know if you're going to be successful. You're attempting to do the mitzvah Pidyon Shvuyim. Do you know what I do when I flow? I am absolutely currently, with pun intended. Thank you. So I'm absolutely currently doing the mitzvah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you're only potentially doing a mitzvah. Meanwhile, I'm actually doing a mitzvah. So the river says to Rav Pinchas ben Yair, my mitzvah is better than yours. Amar le'imi atachol le'gozroni alecha shalo yavro b'cha mayim la'olam. So Rav Pinchas Ben Yair now starts to get serious. And he says as follows, look, here's your options. Okay, and your options are going to be very simple. Either you split from me right now, or the gezerah that I'm going to make is that no water is going to flow through you ever again. Okay. Now, I guess when you're Rav Pinchas Ben Yair, you can make those kinds of demands. And so now the river finally obliges, chalak lay. So the river splits for Rav Pinchas Ben Yair. Hava hu gavra dava darichiti lepischa. So there was a person that was walking together with Rav Pinchas Ben Yair, and he was en route to collect wheat so that he's going to be able to grind the wheat for matzah on Pesach. Amalei chalak lay nami lahai de mitzvah asik. So Rav Pinchas Ben Yair once again points his finger at the river and says, you're going to be splitting again because that person needs to pass over because he's on route to do a mitzvah. There's a really interesting and important Rashi on this where Rashi says, what mitzvah is he coming to do? I'm reading the Rashi inside. It's the second wide line. Rashi writes, the mitzvah, asik dechsev u'shmartem es ha-mitzvos, de mitzchilas tchina v'harkada v'yishimer l'shem matzah. Rashi says, because we know that for the matzah that we eat on the Seder night, it has to be matzah shmura, and it has to be guarded matzah. Guarded from what point? So Rashi writes with clarity, it's from the point of tchina, from the point that you're grinding the flour, that's the point where it requires shmura. So mitchina ve'elech, says Rashi. We also know this too is subject to a debate in terms of from what point of the processing of the flour does shmir need to occur. And so Rashi over here takes a very clear position. It has to be from Tchina Nelech. And again, other Rishonim disagree with Rashi. So anyway, so Rav Pinchas Ben Yair now instructed the river to open up a second time for the person with the matzah, with the flour. So Chalaklei. And now a third round. Now there was an Arab that was walking together in accompaniment with Rav Pinchas Ben Yair and the Jew with the flour. And Amalei now, for a third time, Rav Pinchas Ben Yair is giving instruction to the river, Chalokle Namilahai. Tololei Makacho Simlevne Levaya. I don't want people to say that, look, just because he's not Jewish, the river is not going to be splitting for him. He's accompanying us. And I want people to understand that when you're accompanying somebody who are doing mitzvos, you're given the status of those people as well. And so therefore, the river for a third time now split for the Arab who was walking together with them. Chalakle. So Amar Rav Yosef, Kamana Fishkavra, Mimoshe Vishisim Ravan, Dilo Hasim Chazimna Vahacha Tasa Zimna. So Rav Yosef now takes stock about what just happened. Right? What just happened is that the river split for Rav Pinchas Ben Yair three times, and for Moshe for 600,000 Jews, and only split one time. It's amazing. Vidilma Achinami Chadazimna. The Gemara says, now wait one second. I'm not sure if the conclusion is absolutely correct. Meaning, could it not be that when Rav Pinchas Ben Yair was demanding that the river split, he just simply meant, don't close yet? So in other words, so maybe it only split once. To which the Gemara says, okay, so you know what, I'll give you that. So the Gemara says, Ela Kim Moshe Vishisim Ravan. So the Gemara says, okay, but even if it just split one time, so that means that Rav Pinchas Ben Yair is on the same plane, on the same level as Moshe, where the river split for Moshe and the 600,000 Jews as it did for Rav Pinchas Ben Yair. Okay, Rav Yosef is just simply commenting, you see the greatness of Rav Pinchas Ben Yair. Now you understand, by the way, at this point in time, we haven't even gotten to the point of the story. All this is just like kind of preamble. So, and here now we get to the story, the point of the story that the Gemara wants to highlight. So now he's on his way and he's stopping now at a bed and breakfast. Now the bed and breakfast over here, let's just assume for our purposes right now, it's run by Ame Haaretz. But in any event, they gave now barley to the donkey of Rav Pinchas Ben Yair and Lo Achal. And the donkey refused to eat the barley. So for reasons that the owner of the bed and breakfast did not understand, the donkey was not eating. So chavtinu. So the Gemara says, okay, so they figured, you know what, maybe it's not sifted enough. So they took the barley and they sifted the barley. So lo achal, and still donkey refused to eat it. So nakrinu. So they said, okay, must be that maybe it's not clean enough. Right? Donkey's got very fine taste in the barley that it's going to eat. So they started now really taking out any of the psolas of the barley, but still lo achal, the donkey wouldn't eat it. Amar lahu dima lo ma'asron asrinu va'achal. Oh, so now, Rav Pinchas Ben Yair says, oh, trumas amaisos were not taken off. And so he takes those trumas amaisos from it, and now the donkey goes in and eats from the barley. Now, Amar, ani azu holachas lasor v'tzon kona v'atam achlam aso tvalim. So, and to which Rav Pinchas Ben Yair now comes and he says, look, this poor soul, talking about his donkey, is en route to do the will of its creator, right, is accompanying us to do a mitzvah, and you're feeding a tevel on untithed produce. And so Rav Pinchas Ben Yair was shocked that they even thought in doing so. Now, in just a moment, what we're going to be learning together is that it was in fact Demai. And the question which we're going to be learning together is whether or not, if it's Demai, you have to take off Trumas Maestros for animal consumption. For human consumption, as we learned in yesterday's daf, and we're now reviewing today, for human consumption, there is a chumrah that was imposed by the Chachamim that we have to take off Trumas Maestros, even though there is a really good chance that the Ame Ha'aretz, in fact, already took off Trumas Maestros, we still, as a chumrah midrabanan, have to take it off once again. But that's for human consumption. Is the chumrah derabanan going to also extend for animal consumption as well? Stay tuned in just a moment as the Gemara is about to discuss that. In the meantime, however, it is also really interesting to note that even if it was tevel, is tevel aser behana'a? Are you allowed to get benefit from tevel? So So that in of itself also is an interesting discussion, an important discussion. And so really the truth of the matter is that all this may just be serving as a chumrah, as a stringency. But again, it's just also something important to keep in mind in terms of whether the basic halacha is can I take untithed produce and feed it to your animals? But anyway, umi mechaiva. The Gemara over here now is going to be quoting from the Mishnah and Demai. So already in the last couple of days of the daf, we've learned together numerous Mishnahs in Demai. Yesterday, we learned a couple of Mishnahs of the third parak. Here, we're learning a Mishnah together of the first parak of Demai. V'atanan, the Gemara quotes the Mishnah. The Mishnah says very clearly that if what I'm doing is I'm buying grain for animal consumption or flour because I'm using it in order to process hides. Part of the tanning of the hides involves flour. And or let's say I'm buying oil, but I'm buying oil for illumination, or to use it for lubrication for my utensils. And any of those events. So when I'm not buying it for human consumption for achila, and I'm buying it for my amarits, there's no requirement to take off chumas and maestros. Meaning again, I'm going to review. This is demai. There's a chumra derabanan. There's a rabbinic stringency to take off chumas and maestros, but that's only if you and I are going to eat it. If we're using it for any other purpose, including animal consumption, there is no requirement to take off Trumas HaMaisos from Demai. So says the Mishnah in Demai. And so the Gemara wonders now, there was no need to take off Trumas HaMaisos for the animal of Rav Pinchas Ben Yair. So what is happening? To which the Gemara's response is, Hasama idmar la amr Rabbi Yochanan loshana la shalacha mitchila la behema. Avalacha mitchila la adam v'nimcha lehem la behema chayav la aser. Rav Yochanan throws in an important qualifier. When is that true that if I buy produce for animal consumption, I have to take off Demai? If that's where I principally bought it for the animal. But let's say my original purchase was for me, and then I change my mind, and then I'm now going to feed it to my animal. So then I have to take off Trumas HaMaestros. V'hatanya. And the Gemara is using this as a proof. Usually V'hatanya is a challenge, but over here in Rashi, almost always tells us when it's coming as a proof. Rashi here does that as well. This is in fact a proof that there is such a distinction to be made. The Brisa says very clearly that when you originally purchased it, you purchased it for you to consume. And then you change your mind, decide to give it to your animal, you have to take off Trumas HaMaestros, even though it's only Demai. Shama Rebbe. Okay. So Adkan, so that brings us really to the crux of the story, the centerpiece of the story, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu protected the animals of Tzadikim. And that is the story of the donkey of Rav Pinchas Ben Yair. And again, from that, the Gemara developed the principle that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking to protect the animals of Tzadikim, how much more so are the HaKadosh Baruch Hu looking to protect the Tzadikim themselves? It's so funny, by the way, it's like, on one hand, I hear the argument. On the other hand, if I may, which I'm not allowed to, but if I may counter the argument, HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to protect the animals because they don't have das. In other words, they can't think for themselves. So in other words, they need more divine protection. However, when it comes to human beings, on the other hand, we have das and we have the ability to be more careful. So I know the Gemara said it three times, and it's like it's an irrefutable point. I could see a difference between an animal and a person, but okay.
Given humans also, show me that the guy is not really aware what's happening.
Okay, fine. Okay, good. And a reminder of the Tosfos that we saw back on Daf Hei Amud Beis, this divine protection that's afforded to tzaddikim. Tosfos says that's only as it relates to food and the consumption of non-kosher food. Other areas of halacha, Kadosh Baruch Hu does not provide this kind of divine protection. So said Tosfos on the bottom of Hei Amud Beis. Just a good reminder of that Tosfos. We're not going to let go of the story, however. There's going to be more to the story, and the Gemara continues now with the story. In order to appreciate and understand the story, just to understand one thing about Rav Pinchas ben Yair, and the rest of the story is going to flow so well. He never said yes to an invitation. Somebody invited him over to eat. The man never said yes. Never. As we're going to learn at the end of the story, if I may just spoil just a little bit of the ending of it, even if it's his own father who invited him over for a meal, the man never said yes. Okay? And so if he accepted an invitation from you, so that means you were somebody special. But as we're going to see in just a moment, it meant you were nobody because nobody successfully invited him over. And so with that stated now, so watch what happened. Shama Rebbe, Nafak La'ape. So Rebbe hears that Rav Pinchas ben Yair is coming to town, and Rebbe now comes out to greet him. Amalei Ratzon Chasod Etzli, so Rebbe extends to him an invitation. And now, right, you know what's going to happen from here. So Amalei Hain. So first Rav Pinchas ben Yair says, sure, I'd love to accept an invitation. In other words, he was invited by the Nasi, by the leader of the Jewish people. So he says yes. Salvu Panav Shel Rebbe. Now Rebbe's reaction, right, it almost like offended Rav Pinchas ben Yair. Rebbe was elated. The man was glowing. So Amar lo kemeduma ata shemudar anam isolani. So Rav Pinchas ben Yair says to Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, to a certain degree, it's an overreaction. Meaning, I know I'm not an easy invite. I know I normally say no, but God forbid it has nothing to do with the Jewish people. Don't make it sound like that I made a neder that I'm never benefiting from the Jewish people. I love the Jewish people. You saw Kedoshinain. The Jewish people are holy people. And my refusal of an invitation is never anything personal against Jewish people. Yesh rotze ve'ein lo. And now Rav Pinchas ben Yair says, look, here's why I normally say no. Because look, let's put people in their categories. So yesh rotze ve'ein lo. So some people would love to have me over, but they just simply don't have the means. V'yesh yesh lo ve'ein rotze. Now there are people who have means, but quite frankly, they don't want to. In other words, they know that it's the right thing to do to invite people over and to feed them, but they really don't want to. Uksiv, and this is not me reporting this information. Go back to Mishlei, and you'll see it. It's mamish simple pshat in the pasuk in Mishlei. Al tochem eslachem ra. Don't eat bad bread, says the pasuk in Mishlei. Bad bread. What does that mean? All right. Lechem ra ayin. The altis ulamato mosav, right? Don't eat any other delicacies. Ki kamo serab nafsho, kainu ochel v'shaso yomalach v'libo balimach. Right? He'll tell you that he wants to eat, but his heart's not really with you. Meaning, there are people who have money, but they really do not want to share it with you, and so they do so be'ayin ra, with a bad eye. The ata now, Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair says to Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. So I normally say no because people usually fall into one of those two categories, where they have the means but they don't want me. Or they don't have the means, but they want me. Now you, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, so I know that you got to check on both. Ata rotze v'yeshlecha. Now, you really want me, and also we know Rabbi Yehuda Anasi was one of the wealthiest people historically. So he had the means. So mi ha'ashtem misavina de b'milso de mitzvah katachina. Ki hadrana asina alech lagabech. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair says, but look, let's do a rain check. Right now I'm en route to do a mitzvah of pidyon shvuyim. So and when I come back, so I'm going to stop over and I'll stop and eat by you. So right now I'm saying yes, but yes with a rain check. Okay. Ki asa, you're right. It's so funny. We all know where the story's going to go. Well, I know because I prepared, but we all know where the story's headed. Ki asa yisrame al be'ahu pischa davekai mebekud naisa chivarta. So now on the return, and it's so funny, the Gemara does not tell us whether or not he was successful or not successful in the mitzvah pidyon shvuyim. Okay. Meaning not germane to the point the story is trying to make. And the Gemara says, so now on the return, so he goes to Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, as he promised, and now he walks into the house, but as he walks into the house, he's greeted with white mules. So it happens to be the entrance he walked in, so there were white mules over there. Now I know I feel the same way you do, like, okay, good, white mules, that's very nice. In other words, who cares? But apparently, it's very clear from the Gemara, white mules were the most dangerous types of mules. They were, it was a sakana. It was a, these white mules served as a real danger to human beings.
So,
yeah, that's so you're not the first person to ask that question. So So Pinchas Ben Yair's reaction is that he's the Malcham Avis is right here in the house of Pinchas Ben Yair. Malcham Avis takes on the form of white mules today, and I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna eat in this house. No, thank you. So Shama Rebbe Nafek Lape. So now Rebbe hears this and he's losing his opportunity of hosting Rav Pinchas Ben Yair. So now he's running and desperately trying to get Rav Pinchas Ben Yair to come back in and to eat with him. Amar Lei Mizavnina Luhu. So and desperately now, with every explanation and every way to try to remove the impediment of the white mules. So the first suggestion that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi makes to Rav Pinchas Ben Yair is, I'll tell you what, I'll sell them. Sell them. Okay, and so what? You're taking the dangerous item and putting it in someone else's hand? That's a violation of Lifnei Iver. So Mifar Kinalu, so he says, okay, so I'll let them go out into the wild. To which Rav Pinchas Ben Yair says, Mafsha Sezeka. Okay, so now you're sending dangerous items out into the wild, and so now this is going to be a public hazard. Akarnaluhu. Okay, so I'll just simply rip off the hooves of these mules. Iketzar balei chayim. To which Rav Pinchas Ben Yair says you're causing pain to the animal. Katlinaluhu. So he says, okay, I'll kill the animals. So ika bal tashchis. So that's a violation of bal tashchis. Hava kemivatish beituva. And so now Rav Yehuda Nasi is still pleading with Rav Pinchas Ben Yair, please come in. Gava tura beinaihu. And what happens is that as the conversation continues, a mountain now grows between Rav Pinchas Ben Yair and Rav Yehuda Nasi. And so therefore, divine intervention creating now, literally or figuratively, again, depending on which side you are on the, you know, on the more rational approach, but literally or figuratively, a mountain grows now between them. And so now Rav Yehuda Nasi understood that was an opportunity lost. He is not going to have Pinchas Ben Yair teed over by him. So Bacha Rebbe Va'amar, Rebbe cries, Ma bechayim kach b'miseh samak achas kama v'chama. And now the conclusion, which is, look, Rav Pinchas Ben Yair is such a special individual, such a holy individual. Now imagine that's when he's alive. How much more so after he died? Tzaddikim's power and influence is even stronger after the person died than while he's alive. How do I know this? Tzaddikim have a power greater in their death than they do while they're alive. Shenemar. The Gemara takes us to the episode, to the incident in Malachim Beis regarding Elisha's bones. What was Elisha's bones able to do? Resuscitate and revive somebody who died. Somebody died in battle. They didn't have time to give him proper burial. They threw him into a cave. Happens to be that this person's body comes into contact, just contact, with the bones of Elisha, the Navi, and the person comes back to life. So you see that his powers are greater post-mortem than they are when he was alive. How do we see that the powers were greater? So Rashi over here writes, and Rashi could be found towards the bottom of the Amud. Rashi is about five lines after they get wide. Rashi says, because when he was alive, we know Elisha resurrected somebody. He resurrected the son of the Isha Shunamis. But what did he have to do? So the first thing he did is he davened to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Then he did a little bit of CPR. Right? He put his hands on his hands, his feet on his feet, mouth to mouth. And he had to go through a process in order to revive him. Here, what did he do? Negiah. Just a little contact, and boom, he comes right back to life. So Amalei Rapapa Labai V'dim L'Kiyuma Bei Berchasa De'Eliyahu. So the Gemara says, maybe this is not a referendum on how great tzaddikim are after they died. Maybe the only reason why he resuscitated him was just simply to fulfill the promise of Eliyahu. Eliyahu, before he goes on, before he leaves this world, so he tells Elisha, or Elisha begs him, Elisha asks for twice the nevuah power of Eliyahu. Certainly an interesting request that Elisha makes, but was granted. And so maybe over here, look, Eliyahu revived somebody. He brought somebody back to life. So in order for the bracha of Eliyahu to fall on Elisha, so Elisha needed a second act of Tchiyas HaMeisim. And so maybe all this was just a kiyum of the bracha. To which the Gemara says, no, I don't think so. So the Gemara says, Amar lei, Rav Papa Labai, V'dum l'kima be'berchasa d'aliyahu d'chsiv, sorry, I read this already, d'chsiv ayina pishtayim b'ruchacha elai, Amar lei, i'achi haino d'tanya avraglav amadol v'esa lo halach. So the Gemara says, no. Because we also know that even though that this person that was buried next to Eliyahu HaNavi received Tchias HaMesim, but it was only momentary Tchias HaMesim. He stood up, but he went right back down again. And so this is not a Kiyum of the Bracha. If it were a Kiyum of the Bracha, so then he would have lived longer than just that moment. Ela b'mayi kaim k'damar av yochan sh'ripetz l'ras na'aman sh'ishkula k'mesh n'emar al tina k'mes. As far as the second Tchias HaMesim that was done by Elisha, that was where he cured Naaman of his saras, right? Not long ago, we did this in the Gemara regarding the incident of Elisha and Naaman. But and remember Gehazi, who runs back to Naaman to tell him that, what's it called? Even though Elisha said it was going to be a freebie, but it's not going to be a freebie, he wants to charge money. Okay, anyway. He cured Naaman of his saras. And as a result of that, having saras is like you're dead. That's what Moshe petitioned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't let Miriam be like somebody who's dead, because she had saras. Anyway, so that was the second Tchias HaMesim of Elisha. And so over here, the fact that he resurrected the person after Elisha was already dead, it shows you the power of tzaddikim after they're dead. Am Rav Yeshua ben Levi, lama nikra shman yemim. You know that donkeys, these white donkeys, are also referred to as yemim. So happens to be, where do we see this? Actually, go back to last week's parsha. Right, Rashi over here on the bottom, quotes from last week's parsha, Asher Matzah Es HaYemim. Right, one of the sons of Esav was basically a breeder of these white mules. Anyway, these white mules are referred to as yemim. So Sheyem Asamu Tal Salabiris, because people are intimidated by these animals, they're fearful of these animals. Generally speaking, in the relationship between humans and animals, so animals are scared of us. Right? I just commented the other day, right? Those lizards, they see you. What's it called? Not the lizards, the bigger ones. The iguanas. So they see you and they run away. Wow. They're such timid animals. So anyway, usually the relationship between humans and animals is that they're scared of us. But meanwhile, when it comes to these white mules, so we are terrified of them. I never saw somebody who got smacked by one of these white mules and lived. So the Gemara says, "V'haka chazina dechaye." No, he says, "What do you mean? No, I've seen people survive." So the Gemara says, "Ema v'chayas." No, what I meant is they never cured. Meaning, they get permanently injured by these animals. Ve'ka chazina demitze. So the Gemara says, I've seen that as well. I've seen people get hit by these white donkeys and recover from injury. So the Gemara says, dechivran resh karaihu ka'amrina. No, you misunderstood me. I'm talking about where the hooves had a white ring around them. We're talking about a very specific species of these white donkeys, these white mules. Anyway, Adkan, that brings us to the end of the incident. But let's do a little bit more. Let's finish off the daf today. Ein od milvado. The pasuk says that there's none like a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Amar Rabbi Chanina va'afilu kshafim. In other words, when we talk about a Kadosh Baruch Hu's power, there is no power greater than a Kadosh Baruch Hu in even magic. Now, the truth of the matter is, it's hard for us to understand, meaning it seems to be a pretty obvious point. Meaning a Kadosh Baruch Hu is hakol yachol, in other words, he's the everything. So obviously there's nothing greater than a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and nothing can beat him. But I guess the Gemara's point is that even in this world, even though this world is confined to certain laws that are given, like we discussed even earlier this daf, like the laws of nature, but still ein od mevado, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still a greater force in this world. The Gemara gives us an example with the following episode. A witch tried to get the dirt from underneath the feet of Rabbi Chanina, and apparently that would be a way of influencing, with using her sorcery, her magic, in terms of defeating Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Chanina starts laughing. He's like, here, you want the dirt? Go ahead, take it. I'm not even going to stop you from taking it. Because ain od milvado, there's none like a Kadosh Baruch Hu ksiv. So the Gemara over here says, quoting in the name of Rav Yochanan, you know that magic, you know why it's called? Do you know why it's called kishuf? Because it stands for the words, machishim pamaya shel mala. In other words, it's able to overturn the laws of nature. So Shani Rabbi Chanina did an fish zechus. Rabbi Chanina was not worried because he had zechuyos. Va'am Rabbi Chanina ein adam nokef etzbal milamata, ella imkein machrizen alav milamala. You stub your toe, that is hashkacha pratis. That's a Kadosh Baruch Hu wanting you to stub your toe. Shenemra me'ashem etzadei gavra mechoneniva adam maya avin darko. A person doesn't always understand every step that he takes, and so stubbing your toe is part of hashkacha pratis. That was designed and determined by Kadosh Baruch Hu. Amar Rav Elazar dam nikof meratzah kadam ola. The blood that comes out when you stub your toe is like the blood of a carbon ola, meaning it provides kapara. Amar Rava begodo yaminu v'nikof sheni. And Rava qualifies, Rava says that it's specifically your big toe, and that's when you stubbed it a second time. So in other words, the first time, I guess you can call that, that was you. In other words, you should have been a little bit more careful. But for a second time now where the pain is excruciating and the blood's coming out, that's like the dam of a carbon. And on top of that, another qualification is you're walking to do a mitzvah. So right now you're totally in the clear. Meaning there's no reason that you should be punished for this, for what you're about to do. So therefore, when the blood comes out, it's providing a kapara. Amar lavar Pinchas ben Yamir amav lo basa aprusa sheinu shelo umiyom she'amad al da'ato lo nena mesudas aviv. Rav Pinchas ben Yair never broke bread belonging to somebody else, meaning he always ate at his own house, never accepted an invitation anywhere, and from the time that he was able to have a good state of mind, when he arrived at some state of maturation, lo nena mesudas aviv, he never even ate by his parents' home. So in other words, he never benefited from anyone else's food other than his own.